Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. 14 minutes past 9 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us. We are thrilled that you decided to spend at least a portion of your day with us. We have a lot to talk about, so we'll get to that in just a minute. A reminder, you can write your letters, and here are a couple things that we ask for you to do with your letters. We've noticed you get a little wordy sometimes. We love you, but you get a little wordy. And also, if you're going to do it, just give it a quick look over.
Sure. If you want to get it, you want to get your letter read.
Right.
Do it in a sentence.
Because sometimes we don't know what you're saying, and there's words missing, and sometimes sentences need verbs and nouns, and if you don't have those, we don't know what you're trying to say to us.
I don't use words like little, L-I-D-D-L-A, stuff like that.
I still don't get that one, yeah. Quite frankly.
If you went to a progressive school, look up verb in the dictionary.
I don't know what you're saying.
I don't know why.
All right. So that's it. Keep them short. Yeah, keep them to the point. And then that's right. Scold is over. It's not even scold. This is a friendly reminder. That's right. So joining us for the discussion and panel at WAMC.org for your letter. All right. Joining us for the discussion this morning, you've already heard her voice. She's the communications consultant, and she joins us every week, and we're thrilled to have her. Teresa Bourgeois, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you? We're good. We're also delighted to have a brand new a newbie to our program. She is a reporter, a community engagement editor. We'll find out what that means in just a moment. For the Berkshire Eagle, Jen Smith is here. Good morning, Jen.
Thank you, Joe. Good morning.
I have to tell you, Joe, for whatever it's worth, I've been following Jen for many years in the Berkshires, 12 years. She's a phenomenal reporter.
She's a great reporter, and we're thrilled that she's with us. What is a community engagement editor?
It's the catch-all phrase for just being in touch with the community and doing everything that nobody else wants to do, like answer the phones and show people around. I do everything from school tours at the Eagle to
So is that an editing talks. Position? Like, do you edit in the sense of, oh, I'm not doing that school?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
Maybe you think, no, I don't think about it. But no, it's a really great thing. We talk about doing things like, when a story can be talked about, you can have a really good conversation. So we talk about forums, we talk about what other opportunities are there to share this story in different platforms.
So for example, the huge story over there about the Berkshire Museum, mm-hmm. and they're selling their patrimony. Oh, did I say that? Everybody wants there is nothing that people have wanted to talk about more in the Berkshires than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll definitely continue this fall looking at opportunities to, let people air their opinions, their voices, and we do a lot of talking about, who are the folks we need to talk to who have a role in this story, and so that's the way we got not only the figureheads. We had Larry Parnas, one of our reporters, who actually went down to Van Shield's previous job.
He's the director of the museum.
Yes, exactly.
And it turned out he did exactly the same kind of thing down there that he did. And Larry Parnas did mm-hmm. a terrific story. Mm-hmm. I think it should get a Pulitzer, to be honest with you.
And so we had that part of the spectrum. And then we had the nuances. There's a local graphic designer who was doing these great parodies, these satires of Norman Rockwell's paintings, but using the rhetoric from the narrative of the museum issue. Mark Tomasi. So we had a great story on him. We finally got him to sit down with us. So there's that was just so telling of how much this is stretched into the community at a lot of different levels and across different demographics.
Meanwhile, the sale's what, November 10th?
Yes, it's coming up soon, and there's no signs of it slowing down or being delayed at all.
Everybody's been calling for a pause, but that doesn't seem to be going to happen.
I have three words to say: dumb, dumb, and dumber.
All right. A new movie coming to a Cineplex near you, by the way. Jim Carrey and Jeff.
Is that kind of the movie we're living through right now?
Yeah,
anyway.
Jeff Daniels still wanting to play that role. All right. So let's finally let me introduce Dr. Alan Chartok to you. You know him. He's right there.
Well,
it's good to see you there.
It's true. Do I doing something wrong?
No, I noted that you have your Berkshire Eagle hat on.
I do, because the other one disappeared, my regular WMC hat. I knew Jen was coming in, so I wore my Berkshire Eagle hat.
I've been working with this guy for a quarter of a century. I've never seen him do that for anybody else, Jen, so you should be thrilled.
Yeah, well, that's
be a big fan.
But Joe, let's talk a little bit about the crucial issue here.
Absolutely, and that would be the lockbox and filling the lockbox, and the fact that our fund drive starts in just a few days on Monday morning, 6 a.m., and we need to get to the $500,000 point in the drive.
Now, Joe, there's good news and there's bad news. Which do you want first?
Well, I know what you're more comfortable telling us, so why don't we start with the bad news?
The bad news is no. I have to start with the good news.
Okay, start with
otherwise,
the good news.
The listeners could. Fix the bad news, though, right?
Otherwise, the shtick doesn't work.
Okay, so tell me the good news.
The good news is we only have $150,000 to go to make the $500,000. We're over $350,000 now.
$352,370, right. So $148,000 to go, yes.
And the good news, of course, is that our wonderful friend Emily Fisher put $5,000 in if we can make it. Remember, folks, not added to, but if we can make it. And then our very good friend from Chatham said, I'll tell you what, stop this nonsense. I'll give you $10,000 if you can do it. So now the reward is $15,000 if we can do it. It's not the reason to do it. The reason to do it is because it's right. But then one more thing that has to be said here. That's the good news. Want to know the bad news?
The bad news is
there's $150,000 left.
$148,000 that we need to make in, today? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So 5 days.
And remember that when we have fund drives, we make $100,000, at least $100,000
right.
Every day. The last two, we've made $500,000 in one day. So if you can just see your way clear to saying, okay, I listen to it, I use it. I don't want to be one of those people who listen to it and find a reason. As my twin brother Lewis always said, there are 10,000 reasons not to give. And the main reason to give is because you use it and because it's yours and because you've made it what it is. So if everybody would just walk to a phone, 1-800-323-9262, hit zero, 1-800-323-9262, or WAMC.org, which is a preferred way from our perspective to do it. We would love to hear from you now. And there's a new thing on the table. You can, of course, get the few, and I mean few. How many left of the do you have any idea, Joe?
About 200 pairs.
200? No. That's the Harry Belafonte.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the
Capital Steps. I think there are so few that we didn't even really even mention it because we feel that they'll be gone by the time they.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I think it was like 10 pairs.
And only 200 pairs out of all of those tickets in the egg for Harry Belafonte. And if you miss it, you will have missed the thing of the century. I mean, here's this wonderful man who is going to be talking about his life. He's not going to be singing. His life. And what it's meant and what he's lived through, you know, you don't want to be one of the 300,000 people who say you were there that weren't. Got it?
Got it. Now, also, and don't worry, Jen, pretty soon we'll talk to you about going on in the world, I promise you.
Yeah.
But we also have the WAMC socks.
Have you seen these socks.
Oh, we have WAMC
socks. You have
socks.
WAMC socks?
We have two.
What kind of socks are they?
Okay.
Wow.
Extraordinary.
Thank you for asking, Jen. We have two different kinds. We have the classic, which has the WAMC logo and is a black, sort of a good old-fashioned dress sock.
Sure, and you walk in. You they're unisex, of course.
Yes.
You walk in and you cross your legs and somebody sees the socks and 2 weeks later you're married.
Right, because you have WAMC in common, you know?
Right, or.
And then we have the limited edition When Pigs Fly socks. Now, Alan can tell you of why Pigs Fly is our motto.
In the very beginning, all those years ago, 1979, we heard from a guy who said, you'll succeed when pigs fly. That's how it started. And, of course, we all together, pulling together, have made it succeed. And the pig became the pig. I called the legislators at one point a bunch of pigs because of their behavior. We got pig underwear. I said, if you believe that, send me something that's piggish. So pig underwear, pig bathrobes, you name it, we got
them.
So
there's a whole closet of pig paraphernalia somewhere in the studio.
Oh, it's right in the, when you come in, it's all over the place. We've got it hanging from
it.
Yeah, the socks are great. So you can get a pair of the socks too. They're $100. And so it's all good. So here's what you need to do. You go to WAMC.org,
yep.
WAMC.org.
And then you oink.
And then they hang up on you and you call back. 1-800-323-9262. But so when pigs fly and you get the so it's a pig flying. on the socks, and they're bright and they're colorful and they're pink and blue and they look great.
You got to get a pair of those socks. I want a pair of those socks.
Our, I don't know. It's not our motto.
No, but they're extraordinarily sexy.
Not Aldo motto.
Yeah.
That's a whole other.
That's a whole other story.
Getting divorced again.
Yeah, getting divorced. Wife wants custody of the kids and
well, there was a story
order,
in the paper
right?
this morning that she was walking around with a shotgun or something
yeah.
like that.
Well, yeah. there you go.
Well,
never
one of
good.
Them was anyway.
Okay, so 1-800-323-9262, WAMC.org for more information on the fun drive. But we got to fill the lockbox. So
everybody listening today, right? You said a cup of coffee and a muffin. If everybody gave $5, right?
That's what you keep thinking that that's what's going to motivate people to say that. And I have to say I love you, Teresa, of course, and that you keep saying, well, if we just mentioned that it would be
well,
a
you
cup of
said
coffee.
That.
The equivalent.
You did say that about. Last week.
I forgot that.
Yeah.
That's where I got it.
You were making the point. It was one of many points, but you were making the point that
Stream
if everybody just gave $5 right now that we know who are listening, we'd be done.
That's
and the whole drive.
Which astounded me. I didn't realize.
That's, yeah.
No. Yeah. Well,
but we need more. Yeah. Okay.
And the socks. Everybody's going to want the pig's fly socks.
We're going to press the reset button. We're going to give you a moment to go to your computer or make a phone call. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll actually get started. You'll hear Jen's voice. I promise you.
We're getting close, Joe. Very close. But now everybody, it's got to be the whoosh now.
We
got to
get ready for the whoosh.
Yeah.
Ready for the whoosh. 1-800-323-9262 or WAMC.org. We'll be right back. All right, we have a ton of issues to discuss, and I want to get to them in a moment. However, we've got more than a couple of letters, so I want to address this right off the bat. We were talking early when we were introducing Jen Smith, our newest panel member, and from the Berkshire Eagle, and Alan was mentioning the big story of the Berkshire Museum, and we got a bunch of people who live in other parts of the world, even though this is a national story. This has gone in every major paper and all national news.
And the New Yorker.
Well, the New Yorker, the New York Times, it's been all over the place, Washington Post. So
my column, very early.
People are asking what the story is, so we said we would explain it to them. And the story is that the Berkshire Museum is a community museum. It has this incredible holding of
40 painting. Well, they have many items in their
collections. They're selling everything,
yes.
But
they've curated or selected, I guess selected is a better phrase in this case, 40 pieces from their collection of value that have been assessed through Sotheby's to hold certain value to meet their goal to embark on this next phase of expansion, which there are architectural renderings of a new lobby and new ways of engaging and sort of modernizing the museum, and that's the premise. But as you pull those threads and dig a little deeper, it's a much more complex issue of who knew what when and what what were the means doing this.
So
and
part of the 40 paintings,
and which includes some well noted Rockwells among many other
and
notable
Calder
artists.
And the
Rockwells have stepped in, the Rockwell children and grandchildren, and said this is not why Papa gave these, so mm-hmm. that his neighbors could see these.
They were meant to be kept in the Berkshires, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
yes.
Were.
So that is the question of a community museum, and now they seem to be wanting to go into a new direction of a more scientific museum, correct?
That's fine.
Which has always been part of their mission, but
that's fine.
So you sell this to make the money. And the price tag they're thinking that they can make off this?
60 million, something like that.
Yeah. That's the idea. And of course, there have been all sorts of folks across the nation who have chimed in, a matter of ethics. We did a story that this wasn't the first time in the museum's history that this has sort of happened. It's the first time maybe on this scale, but in the past there was artworks that went up for sale that were very, controversial, again, to raise funds to, progress the museum. But that question again of what was the intention, the ethics of these pieces, a lot of them which were donated towards the collection seemingly in perpetuity, what does that mean now? Who gets to decide the fate of these pieces, and is this the most appropriate purpose for
and, And Jen, this morning the big news, contributing news, in breaking in the Berkshire Eagle, mm-hmm. of course, is that Maura Healey, the the fighting Attorney General of Massachusetts, is looking into this deeply.
Yes, yes. So she was out in the Berkshires talking with folks the other week.
So is there a chance that the sale will not go forward?
I wrote a column that will be in this weekend on Saturday that says basically I'm afraid that it will not.
Yeah, it seems. It will not stop. They were saying this several weeks ago that it was too late. Right?
And is there a chance?
It's not. I'm sorry. We got criticized yesterday for talking over each other, and I have to say
we get criticized every day for that.
And I have to say I was the worst offender. That's right. There are those who think that it could be stopped. You know, I'm a big fan of Kenny Rogers, the well-known philosopher who said you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them. This is the time for the Berkshire Museum to fold them because they have they're and I think if they do, they'll get a lot of respect and a lot of people will say this is great of them. And if they don't, there's going to be a legacy of being of people who are not happy.
And is there any chance somebody would come in and buy them and donate them to the Rockwell Museum?
No, there's a better chance somebody will buy them in Saudi Arabia and put them in his basement.
Right, right.
Yeah, we see that with a lot of collection pieces. But I think, you know, that's the sort of compromise proposal, if you will, has been to put a pause and, you know, really think, are there alternative ways to raise the funds to do what the museum needs to do? Are there other uses for these pieces in the collection? You know, is there, I've heard talks of, you know, is there just a way we can reintegrate them into to public view? Because some of them have been in storage for a while. And so it has generated this ongoing conversation. I think that's why we keep asking the questions. But it's you know, definitely affected the board. We're trying to see why. We've heard that a board member has left and why that has happened. So we're trying to ask those questions. We have Amanda Drain, who's our newest Pittsburgh reporter, who's taken that baton from Carrie Saldo, who covered this extensively. And so it's a lot of moving parts.
Yes, but I have to say it really is fascinating to me. The whole thing is fascinating. I wanted to just recommend to everybody, if you do nothing else, look up Berkshire Eagle, Google, Berkshire Eagle, Larry Parnas, and the Berkshire Museum. Because if you do that, your eyes will fall out of your head when you see what the director, this guy Van Shields, had done in a previous posting, which was almost identical to this. Look, I know that there are a lot of very good people who I respect who are on the other side on this one. But I just don't get it. I don't understand why in the world you would sell your children or sell your patrimony, you know, to WAMC, we would go under these circumstances if people weren't there for us. I mean, I know that. And they have to do that, too. They're a not-for-profit institution. There's lots of money in the Berkshires. There are lots of people who would support it. They've got to go and do what's right.
And we have to move on here, but Jen, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I mean, one of the major things, as Alan said, there are two sides, and they're both very articulate in what they're saying. Mm-hmm. However, the thing that seems to stick in the craw of those who are against the sale and are calling for just the pause is that the decision was made without any real community involvement, number one, but number two, that it was sort of a done deal before it came to light.
Yeah, and I think that's what our reporting has yielded in the process of, you know, interviewing different board members, talking to people about putting a timeline together of, you know, what happened leading up to this sale, and I think that's what was disclosed is that, you know, there was some just general talks that, you know, people were consulted from the board and surveyed. It started with this kind of internal survey of board members and some other associates that folks knew of. But I think it surprised people that it was sort of that was the guys that led to this sort of big decision that seemed to really blindside a lot of
people
folks.
Got snookered on this one.
Yeah,
they really
and that's why I think we'll continue to hear different thoughts on this. You know, again, there are folks from the board who are standing by. There are a few folks who are, you know, questioning whether they want to continue to serve. And so we're going to continue to look at that and hear, see if we can get deeper into, you know, what the mindset of everyone has been.
And one more thing, you know, I've been fascinated. To me, when I read the Berkshire Eagle in the middle of the night, like 12:30, whatever it is.
I'm not the only one.
When it comes out, one of the first things I always do is go to the editorial page and I read the letters to the editor. And one of the things that has happened here is clearly there is a movement on both sides. Although, I'll be honest with you, I think that the museum side seems a little bit too close for comfort in terms of what is written in each of these letters. So one of the things to do now is to flood, and you do this in electoral campaigns and everything else, to flood the letters to the editor.
Still one of the last standing foundations of democracy.
Where yeah. Free.
Yeah, and free. And I think the sadder part is that, you know, in the midst of all this, it's still a community museum. It's still literally in the heart of downtown Pittsfield and still is a resource for a lot of people. But it's almost like some folks are, you know, hesitant to step in the door lest they be associated. But there's, you know, they have a great education department.
They do.
It was my childhood backyard. I grew up, on a side street on North Street. And they have dinosaurs. They have an aquarium. They have, you know, just great. It's the home. It's where our high school's science fairs are held now.
Right.
There's children's theater, community theater that partners with all the theater groups downtown.
A little movie house that's fantastic.
Little cinema. Little cinema is a great resource. And
they used to have Calder mobiles.
Yep, they still have the Calder toys and its permanent collection there. And coming up November is Literacy Month, so they always do. They partner with there's the Pittsfield Promise Literacy Initiative and things like that. So, you know, they have a vast amount of community partners.
So there are a lot of people who are listening right now are saying, well, why are you spending so much time on Pittsfield of all places? Well, the answer is this has become a national story.
And it could be your museum. I think we all have a community museum, which all has stuff in their undergrounds.
You know, you making that point about the a community museum, there have been past directors of that museum who've called it exactly that. The Smithsonian is called the nation's attic, and in many ways and in previous administrations they've called the Berkshire Museum the Berkshire's attic.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That is where people would go, like Norman Rockwell, to donate things for the people of the Berkshires to understand more about the artistic heritage of the area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in multiple disciplines, you know, from science, they have the whole new innovation hall. Well, it's not so new now, but that details the legacy from, papermaking to, quality control systems. And,
sure.
And that's all archived there. And, I think that's why all these national organizations have gotten involved, because it raises the question again of what's the position? What's the ethics? What's, the futures of all our museums in our nation that warehouse these things?
All right, so let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get on to other stuff that's making national news as well. We'd love to hear from you. We want to hear from you about the lockbox, which is WAMC.org. Also, the phone number, 1-800-323-9262, and just press 0. 1-800-323-9262, or go to WAMC.org. If you'd like to write to us about any of the subjects that we're talking about, panel@WAMC.org.
We are getting so close, Joe, so close to that $500,000 mark. We can't be stopped if we get there. If everybody puts $5 in, as Teresa has said so brilliantly, if everybody just gave up their cup of coffee and their muffin. I don't eat muffins because they got sugar in them.
We'll be right.
I'd like a banana muffin right now.
Okay. we'll try to take care of you, and we'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, and Teresa Bourgeois, and we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. We have a few. We'll go to those, and then we'll move on.
Yes, we're looking for your letters. From Jordan says, could you have your guest from the Berkshire Eagle, that's Jen Smith, comment on the KKK series of the Gloversville-based Leader Herald very quickly because we're trying to get through this here.
Sure.
Jen, what do you got?
Yeah, I think, you know, just off air now, my comment holds the same. I didn't design the series. I don't work for that paper. But as a community newspaper representative, you cover what's in your backyard. And if there are KKK in your backyard, you talk about them and you're responsible to reporting all sides of the story. I think they're, you know, I'm just on the Leader Herald website right now. And, you know, it says their top story on the mobile site anyways, is city officials met on Monday to state that hate has no home in the city. And I wonder if that would have been a generated discussion had the series not come out.
So it was a 3-day series that they ran, and about the presence of the Ku Klux Klan in the area. Mm-hmm. And so even though it's the most read story on the website and the traffic has been unbelievable, it is drawing some wide criticism. And you mentioned the mayor, Dayton King, who said that the story is inaccurate and undue publicity for a notorious hate group. And it's that question of, you know, should you, if something like that is going on to your community, if you shine a light on it, are you promoting it or are you reporting on it?
Yeah. And you know, it's something I've run into before. So in the past, we had the Westboro Baptist Church was going to come to the Berkshires to protest a military funeral, as they do or threaten to do. And so I wanted to find out the truth behind that. Do I agree with what they do and stand for? No, but it was my opportunity to, you know, at least try to understand where they were coming from. So I called. I talked to a woman there and who was very articulate. Again, I didn't agree with anything. You know, after I hung up the phone, I wanted to sanitize my ear. But it was at least I could ask questions about understanding. And one of the questions I asked was, you know, I look at the photos on your website. You have a lot of children at your protest. Do you think it's fair to have them there? You know, do they have a choice? And it was the first time in the conversation that she paused. And maybe I got her thinking by asking that question because she was never asked that question. So if we don't ask these questions, if as much as we may agree or disagree, it's not my job as a reporter to make a judgment call. It's my job to report on what's going on out there. They never showed up, by the way. But obviously what has shown up in this region is the KKK. You have to report that.
All right, more letters.
Okay, this is from our friend Karen. Why hasn't the president said anything about the horrendous California fires? Is it because they are not his voters and his horrible stance on climate change?
Well, he did talk about them yesterday.
I was pretty sure he had, yes.
Yes, he, I believe it was when, just before he met with the Penguins, the hockey team.
Pittsburgh Penguins.
Pittsburgh Penguins, yeah. And I think at the start of that event, I believe it's one, but he did speak to the fires, and they also, at the White House press briefing, they talked about.
And I think we all have to remember that just because we may not have been watching CNN at that time or reading the whole New York Times, you have to be careful about saying things that may turn out not to be right.
And he did talk to the governor, and he did sign the.
But he's not. I think the point, though, is not accurate. Yeah. He's not tweeting about it. He's not saying our thoughts and prayers are with the people of California,
right,
as 115,000 acres are on fire. Areas are being decimated, and the death toll is
just going to climb.
High.
Right, right. The writer is absolutely right. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm just looking at his Twitter feed now, and mm-hmm. what is he tweeting about? He's tweeting about NFL football. Mm-hmm. And why are they doing that? Because separately on the RNC side, they're raising money. They're doing a bunch of fundraising off the NFL.
We'll get to
NFL.
That story in just a second.
So, mm-hmm. But yes, there's nothing in his Twitter feed in the last 24 hours about the fires, but they did mention it, and they did give a disaster declaration.
So yes. I'm with both of you, all of you, as a matter of fact, but I just want to make it clear. There's nothing that can undermine an assertion worse than being too encompassing and not realizing that somebody has said something. You can't, right. you just can't do it.
Right. Well, FEMA's there. he did sign the declaration.
Okay, we also heard from John. Dear wonderful panel, I like this one.
Thanks,
this
John.
Morning in the
Thanks,
Berkshire John. Eagle, there was a commentary by Eugene Robinson on the dangerous level Trump is taking us to in his being unfit in every way to be president. Amendment 25 was mentioned as a stopgap way to stop Trump from the nuclear disaster he is threatening. Does anyone know more about the amendment and what it can do? Yes, I know a great deal about it. I've studied it. I've taught it for years and years. And the fact of the matter is, you basically need his cabinet, among others, as well as a good number of people in the United States Senate, you know, who would vote for this.
So in brief, what is it?
Well, it's the way you get rid of a president. Mm-hmm. And it's really basically the Woodrow Wilson amendment. You may remember that when Woodrow Wilson had a stroke, his wife would come out of the room and she would say, this is what the president wants you to do. But really, Mrs. Wilson was running the country. So this was an attempt. You get the principal offices of the cabinet. You get, you know, in other words, you get the top people who have to do this. It is unlikely, in my opinion, right now, even with Bob Corker saying and doing what he's doing, a conservative Republican, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, it's unlikely that the 25th Amendment is going to be of any help right now in getting rid of Trump.
And not only are they not getting rid of Trump, I mean, they're advocating for people like Roy Moore to come into the Senate. You know, it's just unbelievable what's going on.
Okay, so thank you for that's from Esther, Esther, and thank you, Esther, for that. And Ted says, it's nice to see you finally paying attention to areas of concern and not just all things Trump. Well, thank you for that. Not?
All right.
Here's a president of the United States who one of his principal senatorial upholders is saying is leading us to World War III. What, we're not going to cover it? Forget it.
Okay, so let's go to a couple of stories that are well, I don't, it's weird. Like, everything is Trump-related, weirdly, isn't it? But
it
anyway,
is.
So
even
but
Harvey Weinstein story is Trump-related.
Okay, so
well, I just have to say one thing, Joe, here, and that is, not only do I write my column for the Berkshire Eagle, but I have a separate column on several New York, upstate New York newspapers, and I have to say one thing about that. And that is, it's very hard to find anything to write about these days because Trump has sucked all the oxygen out of state government and everything else. It's all Trump.
So we're going to go to the Harvey Weinstein story. There's a lot that developed yesterday in the story. Of course, Harvey Weinstein, who was a filmmaker, a producer, was known certainly in Los Angeles and New York. Had his book projects, movie, television, and had and one of the most powerful men in Hollywood. And over after an expose in both the New Yorker, but especially the New York Times, has just watched his entire career and life crumble in a matter of hours, mm-hmm. As a result of more and more and more stories coming out about this man. In the last, say, 24 to 36 hours, he has his wife has left him. Mm-hmm. He apparently is fleeing to go to Europe for sex addiction counseling. Then yesterday, Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie, and many other prominent actresses in Hollywood joined the growing chorus of women who say that they were also harassed by Harvey Weinstein. In addition to that, early yesterday, actually it was Monday, Donna Karan, the famed fashion designer, came out in support of Harvey Weinstein and saying in many cases the women were asking for it. She then, after a very loud chorus of boos and not so nice things, she then said that her remarks were tone deaf and she agreed and took back her statement.
She walked it back.
She walked it back indeed. So there was, again, the New York Times last week, and then on Tuesday, the New Yorker published the report that included multiple allegations of sexual assault, including forced both oral and vaginal sex The article also included accounts of sexual harassment going back to the 90s, with women describing how intimidating Mr. Weinstein was. The question I have about the story is, you know, a similar story, of course, is the Bill Cosby story.
Roger Ailes,
but charges were, but because
Donald
the
Trump.
But those. The difference being that, but charges were filed in the Cosby case, mm-hmm. and in a lot of cases, charges couldn't be filed because of the statute. Settlements happen. So you wonder if charges will be filed here as more women come forward, assuming that a statute of limitations hasn't run out.
You know, I think this case just, you know, it's another wave in the issue that we have nationally with, you know, sex abuse scandals, whether you're talking about Catholic priest or whether you're talking about Hollywood execs. We have a problem with this in our nation of people being exploited under different methods of power. And I think, again, for me, the bigger question is, why do we have such a bystander culture in our society? I think if you look at, you know, Joe, the article you sent us with the big league actresses speaking out, if you read any one of those anecdotes, they say they later told someone, whether it was a parent, whether it was a boyfriend, whether it was a colleague. But why wasn't it reported back then? And, you know, this happens. We see this time and time and again. You know, we even on the local level, we have these sex abuse cases in schools where, you know, things don't come out for years and everyone seemed to know. I think the New York Times even called this the worst hidden secret. And, you know, but yet it was still swept under the rug.
Well, the New York Times was criticized for having had this story a couple of years ago and not publishing it. But they're saying, well, we didn't have it locked down.
We couldn't prove it. And also, but for many of the women who are in various stages of their career, to say anything and against arguably mm-hmm. the most, if not one of the most powerful men in Hollywood, of worrying about mm-hmm. you're gonna say goodbye to your career,
yeah.
and then you have to go through all of that pain.
Well,
again.
It's a culture of not enforcing policy. I mean, I think every company's HR department has a sexual harassment or sexual, you know, assault policy, but no one's there, you know, because this man is powerful, has a lot of influence. You know, as the New York Times op-ed on Saturday mentioned, was a huge donor to a lot of Democratic causes, you know, named a faculty chair after Gloria Steinem. So it was like a big 180. You know, his butt was well covered, you know, under a lot of these liberal, even campus sexual assault was something that he under his campaigns had raised awareness before. But yet, you know, when this came back around, you know, now everyone's turning him back. But, you know, again, there's documentation of this happening over 3 decades.
Right. And a lot of settlements.
But Joe, I just wanted to mention one thing, and that is there is another aspect to this, and that is that the right is now looking at the left and saying, you see, when it happened to Roger Ailes, you were all over it. When it happened to the right-wing guys, to all of these guys, it happened. But you purposely ignored this story because they gave money to the Democratic candidates and the politicians. And I'm assuming that that's a very important dimension to this that we need to talk about.
Yeah, well, I think the Obamas finally came out and made a statement within the past 24 hours.
As did the Clintons.
Condemning them and the Clintons, both which were, you know, beneficiaries of
his money.
His money mm-hmm. in one way or another.
Also, and this is, in the case, the one difference, though, from the in the cases of here, you're talking about, we believe, issues of rape, not just assault or harassment, but rape, mm-hmm. and so those are obviously very serious charges. And the other thing too is that And I don't know if I buy this argument. I've heard it used, but the president tweeted over the weekend and taking the late night shows to task for not mentioning Harvey Weinstein. Saturday Night Live was taken to task for taking out. They actually had jokes in their initial in their dress rehearsal.
Look who's talking though. We're talking about a guy who was famous for having bragged that people should grab other people's women's genitals. Now he's lecturing, hectoring others on this. It's unbelievable.
But the point is right. But the point they're making is then why, you know, why do you do this? And the argument that they have used is that here's a guy. I think the Lorne Michaels quote was is that this is a New York thing, meaning that people in New York and Los Angeles know this guy. Anybody else in the middle of the country doesn't know who the hell Harvey Weinstein is. I don't know if I buy that. I don't think that. I mean, I don't know.
No.
I don't
they
think that
now.
Holds much water. But yeah.
You take away the name, though, it's still the same issue. And again, I think, you know, not only does it tie into some of the politics that, you know, Alan was just mentioning, but it ties into, so my field is education. And we had Betsy DeVos, who, you know, just recently rescinded campus sexual assault policy. And, you know, what protections do we have for any alleged victims, whether, you know, they are reporting, need to get information, just need a little solidarity in society. And I feel like that's something that's severely lacking. And if you don't have other people in power backing this up, you know, what are you to do? And, you know, it's almost like this weird suck it up culture. It's something like it's almost like this weird rite of passage for women and others in society.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Ray Graff is next with the news. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. All right, let's move on to other topics, and we go to one that Teresa mentioned as far as what the president is tweeting about this morning, still tweeting about the NFL. And the reason is because Roger Goodell, who's the commissioner of the National Football League, said that they're looking to make sure that players do not take a knee. And by appearances, anyway, the NFL was one big family 2 weeks ago after President Trump urged owners to fire players who did not stand for the national anthem. Everyone from Roger Goodell to the 32-team owners to the players locked arms in many cases, literally in defiance and unity. But, well, all of that has vanished now as the president continues to harangue the league over the anthem, and a number of fans across the country expressed displeasure with the handful of players who continued to kneel during the anthem. One of the most powerful owners in the league is now speaking openly about benching players who did not stand for the anthem. And Roger Goodell, who said previously that players had a right to voice their opinions, is siding with the owners opposed to letting the players demonstrate. The owners plan to meet next week to establish what to do about the anthem gestures. Like many of our fans, we believe that everyone should stand for the national anthem, Goodell said in a letter to the owners on Tuesday. So it seems as though the pressure put on the league by the president is working.
So here we have a president who I have maintained all along is just a plain old racist, and is generating as much anti-black sentiment to his base so that his base, you know, eats it up and says, okay, that's right, that's what we want. And they poll. Believe me, the White House polls at every moment. They want to know what people are thinking about this. Is it a majority? Is it close to a majority of people who think everybody ought to stand up for the national anthem and put their hand over their hearts or their hats over their hearts or do all of that? And I think what they're finding is we've got something here. We're going to pursue it.
Well, I think that Trump cannot win the legislative battles, so he's engaging in a culture war. And they're doing this as a means of distraction. They're doing this to energize their base. They're doing this to raise money. I think that the Pence stunt over the weekend, where he spent well over $250,000 of taxpayers' money to show up and then walk out of the NFL game, the fact that they immediately then put up a statement and had a whole social media campaign around that, and then within hours had a fundraising campaign around that, I think is just despicable. And so while the, you know, there are, I think, 30 legislative days left in the year, and you need to pass a budget, you need to raise a debt limit, the Child Health Plus, it's day 11 of the Child Health Insurance Program being expired. It's day 11 of the Community Health Center's funding being expired. It's, we have problems in North Korea. News broke yesterday that the North Koreans hacked into the South Korean military and stole U.S. and South Korean military secrets. You have
the, including, by the way, Teresa, a plan to kill the president of North Korea.
You have NAFTA negotiations. The Prime Minister of Canada is in Washington this week, today, dealing with difficult NAFTA negotiations. You have fires in California. You have people without homes because of hurricanes in Texas and Florida. And then, of course, you have the tragedy in Puerto Rico. And what is the President of the United States spending his time on? He's spending his time on a culture war that he's created. And really, he's changed what the purpose, I mean, he's trying to redefine what these folks are protesting. And he's basically taken over their protest and redefined it as saying these players are against our military, when in fact they're not against the military.
Well, but it's always been so. I mean, you know, Hoover at the FBI tried to do that for years and years with Martin Luther King, and to imply all kinds of insidious motives on his part not to bring people of poverty and people who are white and black together and do all of that. So this is the way they always do it. Your word is exactly right, Teresa, repurpose the message.
For their own political gain.
Sure.
It's really disgusting.
And it's distracting from the real issues at hand, like you were saying, with all these looming deadlines on decisions that need to be made for, you know, greater public good. It's turned into this sort of just popular culture distraction again.
And you know, yesterday they took a further step around the anti-climate deal, the clean power provisions. And today or tomorrow, he's going to sign an executive order basically that will further dismantle the Affordable Care Act. And by October 15th, he's reportedly going to decertify the Iran deal. And so in the midst of all of this, when he should be leading, you know, this is what he focuses on.
So I want to know one thing. Maybe you guys can help me with it. How did this bad dream actually happen?
How did
and
he get
are
elected?
We going to wake up?
How did he get elected? Well,
I pretty well know how he got elected.
I tell you, this whole Facebook issue is fascinating.
I have a larger philosophical question, which is, as I wake up every morning and I face the terror that we're facing here, I hold my head and I say that the primal scream, the scream, which is, how did this happen? How did this?
Well, are the Republicans going to step up? You know, is this attack on Corker? Are they going to step up and say this is too much?
No.
I mean, the reports out this morning about, you know, the moron quote from Tillerson.
Yeah.
Well, now one of the NBC reports that what initiated that is a meeting that they had with Trump where he wanted to increase the number of nuclear weapons that we have. He wanted to increase the stockpile. When, of course, it's appropriately, globally, been going in the other direction. And
I don't know why you would use the word appropriately, but it certainly is going in the other direction.
That the appropriately, that we should not be increasing stockpiles of nuclear weapons. That's not a good policy. We should be decreasing the U.S. and other stockpiles of nuclear weapons.
Yeah, but I'm going to put my community engagement hat on for a second and say that I think it's also an issue of, you know, Teresa, you were saying how Trump sort of took the issue of then taking a knee and made it his own instead of actually listening to some of the issues of why people were doing it. And, you know, you're right, it wasn't about the military. It's about race and oppression and you know, things like Charlottesville that have happened in our society that are persisting and causing a lot of institutional issues that haven't been addressed also for decades.
He's fomenting them. He's not going to try to dissipate those because it's not in his interest. He's yet.
Right.
I mean, had the Nazis marching again in Charlottesville this past weekend. Did he say anything about that? No, he didn't.
And again, I think it's a distraction from really just being in touch with what's happening, not only at the national level, but again, I think there's always a strong value in looking what's happening in your communities, looking at what the regional issues are and asking the questions of why. Why is there this divisiveness? Why are there divides?
Because he's fomented it.
But I think divides have existed in our communities far before his issue. I mean, it's the same reason why people protested, our previous president from coming into office, because you have to face it that there's a divide in our nation. And, I think that's sort of the bigger picture issue, to get back to Alan's point of, why is happening. I think it's perpetually going to happen until we, take a lens to our communities and find out why we can't agree on things, why it takes Congress so long to, pass policies that we know are right and good. And that's why we keep trying on a local level to ask these questions, and why we have things like the roundtable.
Are we going to tolerate them? I mean, so far we have tolerated his perpetual lying. And, I listened yesterday to the White House briefing, and, it was just a verbal diarrhea of lies. It was just unbelievable that she, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, gets up there every day, and when it's over, the reporters just shake their heads. They just simple things like the president keeps saying we're the most taxed nation in the world, which is demonstrably not true. So they asked her, why does he say this when he knows it's not true? And she said, well, he didn't say that. Well, yes, he said it. He said it a couple of times, and it's not true. And then you listen to this Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau gave a talk last night at an event called the Fortune Most Powerful Women Summit. And it was just tremendous. And he was talking, among other things, about how to engage gender equity in leadership. And he has launched this Ask Her to Run campaign, where he is actively asking women to run for office, local office, regional office, higher office, and that it's working, and that they're getting more and more women because he believes that there should be a gender balance. Now, you compare that to Donald Trump and his Access Hollywood tape.
All right, we have letters.
Okay, here we go. Dear panelists, in my opinion, trying to transform the sexual assault issue into a left-right paradigm is despicable. Wrong is wrong is wrong. If you want to go this route, New York City's Special Victims Unit had a case in 2015 that the DA's office refused to pursue. That's all about two systems of justice. One is for the rich and powerful, and one is for the rest of us. Teresa was just mentioning this. Cy Vance is now the district attorney, and I think that's what this is referring to. Took some money, I believe, I don't think I'm wrong, for his campaign from Weinstein. And one of the potential cases was dropped, if I remember what I read correctly, and I hope I did here.
Right.
Now there is a sense that what might happen is Vance drops out and Preet Bharara drops in and runs for DA of New York.
Well, there was a Twitter storm yesterday encouraging that to happen, because Cy Vance, not only is there is this issue with in the New Yorker, look at the New York article, listen to the just egregious tape, and some felt that they had a solid case against Weinstein and that Cy Vance walked away from it after getting some donations. Now, they came out yesterday and said they didn't have a case that was strong enough to win. That's why they didn't take the case. But there's a separate issue, too, with a case that Cy Vance had with Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump, and that he then got donations from the Trump lawyer and then dropped that case also. He's in, a lot of heat.
I'm sorry, Jen.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and I think that that's why sort of it's become a political issue, because it's there are these politically motivated reasons of why or why not he's persecuting this case. And, again, I think that's why it merits spotlighting from a lot of different perspectives instead of just a singular vein.
But but I think, though, Alan, when you have Kellyanne Conway coming out and tweeting, you know, it took Hillary about 5 minutes to blame the NRA for Madman's Rampage, but 5 days to sort of kind of blame Harvey Weinstein for sexual assault. Well, I mean, Kellyanne Conway has no standing to talk about people not stepping up on this issue. For God's sakes, who does she work for? Yeah. What did she say about the Access Hollywood tape? What did she say about all the women who have brought cases against Trump?
Sure. Okay, Christine says, hello, panel. Sexual abuse and rape are hidden for years for both genders. Remember the Penn State debacle and the Roman Catholic Church. People knew. Thank you for discussing this today in such detail, and that's from Christine. And Steve says, I enjoyed Jen's input, especially equating Weinstein's behavior to a pervasive abuse of power culture, and that's Steve in Pittsfield. Amy says, Paltrow and Jolie took no risk coming out now with allegations of sexual assault. They could have and should have said something in the past few years when they were already powerful actresses for help to help stop further assaults of younger and more vulnerable Hollywood newcomers. There's more, but I'm going to stop
and
there.
And I firmly agree with that. Yeah. The onlooker syndrome that Jen talked about.
Bystander.
Mm-hmm. Kneeling. At this point, the method of protest is the biggest story, bigger story than the reason for the protest. It's time for a new method, says Terry. I don't agree, of course, but what can I say? Carl says, I'm a regular listener. Glad to hear your discussion with Jen Smith just now. I and my entire family are completely against the plan to gut the collection and change the mission of the museum without true community input and support. Larry Parnas's well-researched expose on Van Shield's prior attempt to cash in on others' wealth is crystal clear. Shields is a snake oil salesman and should be removed along with the rest of the board. Colin says, I am a local Gloversville alien. Many citizens of this city have also received door flyers for the white knights of the KKK. Wow. Speaking for the majority of the city, we do not approve of that hatred in our city. The members in the photos have been identified and now pariahs in our city. And Roger says, I was just thinking the same thought that Alan expressed about this focus on the Pittsburgh Museum, Pittsfield, it's actually a museum. So can the roundtable now go to commentating on Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the Imran Awan case and why it took Hillary Clinton so long to comment on Harvey Weinstein's conduct? We just did that. Okay, and Mike says, an ESPN anchor labels Donald Trump as a white supremacist. Consider these 2 points. One, on the white supremacist and KKK demonstrating, almost all of them white in Charlottesville, Donald Trump said there were a lot of good people out there. And two, the NFL players who kneel at the playing of the national anthem to protest what they say is police brutality towards black males. Many of the NFL players doing this are black. Any chance that this contradiction in attitudes gives credence to the ESPN anchor's theory? Mike. And good Wednesday, panel, says Bill. What must the generals in the Defense Department people be thinking this morning about Trump saying that he wants to increase our nuclear arsenal? Obviously, Trump does not have a clue about the effect on the rest of the world, and especially on those countries that already have enough nuclear firepower to destroy. Okay.
Apparently, their action was to say he was a moron.
Panel. Says Richard, in a highly diverse, massive nation like the United States, the most important fundamental job of the president, one would think, is to keep peace and harmony among diverse masses. Instead, we have a president who does all he can to inflame division, racial, religious, etc., within our country.
That's exactly right.
Dan says, WMC should really step back and say, saying there is any rational motivation for anything that happens inside the Beltway and let it go. Obfuscation is the name of the game. He got elected because the D's and the R's have rigged the system. Joanna says, it's timely to acknowledge attorney Anita Hill, whose courage in testifying about sexual harassment by Clarence Thomas in the Supreme Court nomination hearing brought this issue to national attention. Acts of sexual harassment, assault are widespread. However, they are most always done when there are no witnesses, thereby preventing prosecution. Joanna.
Very good letter. Thank you for reminding people of her bravery.
Christopher says, regarding the report that Trump wanted to increase our nuclear stockpile, Obama committed $1 trillion to upgrading the U.S. nuclear arsenal. That's from Chris. And James says, Trump is playing you like a well-refined Stradivarius. Business is getting done when you folks continue to be so rattled. Congress will act as in the past. The Supreme Court will decide things. The bits of, quote, news are not. Trump is taking and giving advice in ways executives always have. Academic and journalistic understanding seems to misinform. Relax. And that's from Jim Pierce.
I don't understand that letter.
No.
That's not true. I don't normally say this, but that's a dumb letter. I mean, I don't get the point.
That's the Fox News line. I don't know if he's a Fox News listener, but...
Jim, PhD.
Well, I'm just saying... Oh, I know. All right, let me just... I want to dig into this a little bit. Why are we being played? That's what I don't understand. I mean, taking and giving advice in ways executives always have, academic and journalist understanding seem to misinform.
So in other words, we're misinformed because we're calling attention to it. We shouldn't... If I'm reading this letter correctly, we shouldn't, because we should just understand that's the way the game is played.
Yeah, business is getting done while you folks continue to be so rattled.
I'm sorry. By all accounts, whether it's Republicans, Democrats, business people, by all accounts, this man has only limited, if that, grasp of the issues. He is on.
He says he's intelligent. He said that this morning. He's more intelligent
than
he has
than
a IQ test, and then
has
that,
a
and then
IQ.
He has a high IQ. This right. Forbes interview.
I wonder if he's going to release that.
He cannot answer the first or second level question on health care. The way he's talking about the dismantling of health care and what it'll do is just, it's a lie and it's a misunderstanding. The same is true for global interactions. He has no depth of knowledge on these issues. It's dangerous.
All right. We have time for... Are you leaving us?
No.
Okay, good.
My next interview is in the next
Okay, we have 2 minutes. So I'm okay. Just going to hold you for 2 minutes.
Good.
And then there's the travel ban story. The Supreme Court has dismissed the case against Trump and the expired travel ban. They dismissed it to the now expired, and the legal battle over his latest efforts to ban some immigrants will really have to start over again, right?
Well, wait a second. They're giving up on basically a moot case here. So, but there are lots of new ones coming up.
I think it's a matter of proceeding. You have a deadline. You have this, this term of conditions. It's the same thing. So up next is the expiration of the refugee ban.
Sure.
And so I think that was a really easy case to decide to dismiss that because of that. But I think, Alan's exactly right. I think we're going to see an unprecedented amount of continuous litigation, continuous cases within this administration on issues like this because they're taking so long to act on things.
Right. I mean, they just basically said we're going to go to this new round of litigation because the older litigation is moot.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we should take too much from this, although clearly it's going to be that conservative liberal balance.
Well, they did not let the
go ahead.
Previous ruling stand. That's the problem.
Have to hold you there. We have to go. Jen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
You were so
great.
Teresa, we'll see you tomorrow.
I'll
thank you. Alan, thank you. We'll be
You're
right
welcome.
Back.